Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Summertime, and that means vacation time. Got any vacation plans, Timory?
Oh, not this summer. I'm speaking a lot this summer, but I'm looking at going to Rome in the fall. And also, just a heads up, the information will be out there later this month, but I am going to be taking a group to Rome in the spring of next year. So anyone who's interested in going to Rome with me, I'm going to have an incredible priest with us celebrating masses at all of the holy places throughout Rome. And my favorite part coming up is going to Assisi for a three-day retreat in Assisi at the end of the trip.
This sounds fantastic.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm so excited. So I'll have details. I'm working on organizing the trip right now and where exactly we'll be, like going to the steps from the Holy Land where Jesus had walked up to see Pontius Pilate. That, for me, when I went to Rome years ago, was probably one of the most powerful experiences of kneeling, because you're not allowed to walk up them, kneeling and praying as you go one step at a time up. And so I bring that up because my favorite part sometimes is the anticipation of the vacation.
Yeah, so I'm looking at an interesting article from The Week by Eric Barker, and he talks about the science of having a great vacation, offers us a few tips on how to have a great vacation. And you're right, Timory, the number one thing he suggests is anticipate. Book your trip as early as possible, not because it's just prudent or it'll save you money, but that the sooner you book it, the sooner you can start thinking about it and anticipating it. And he says that's actually one of the most enjoyable parts of it. You seem to back that up. I agree. I mean, it is nice thinking about, all right, so we're working today and it's tough and it's, you know, maybe I've got a boring day going or whatever, but hey, coming up, oh man, this is going to be great.
Right. And you have, and it allows you to plan it so that you know what's going to happen, but that excitement with who you're going with or who could come, all these different elements, I think, and for me at least, I love Rome. I'm going to tell you something. Earlier this year, I was just dying to go back to Assisi. I think it's the most wonderful place on earth, and I only spent maybe 5 hours there.
Yeah.
And I've been dying to go back, and I have this holy water from the Holy Land, and I was like, okay, Mother Mary, St. Francis, St. Clair, I'm praying that before I run out of this holy water from Assisi, I might have accidentally said the Holy Land, he'll run out of this holy water from Assisi, please, can you somehow bring me back to Assisi? I would love to. And this opportunity came up to help lead a group out to Rome.
Wow, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Well, I think there's actually a theological virtue that we can point towards, this whole notion of anticipation of something great and how that helps you get through whatever it is you're going through now. And I think that's just hope, right? Like, you have to have something good in the future that you're confident about to get through whatever you might be going through today. I mean, isn't that just common sense? But really, all of life is about that. If you find yourself in a place where there's no hope for anything better in the future, that's equated with despair, right? Like, that, I think, is the definition of despair. Like, it's not going to get any better than this. Mm-hmm. Yet, when you do have that thing that, all right, yes, whatever this might be today, tomorrow, look what's going to be tomorrow. And isn't that going to be amazing? That helps with you right now, right? It's that hope of getting something in the future. And that's, I mean, to me, that's what all life is about. Like, ultimately, we do live in this valley of tears, right? I mean, there is a lot of struggle. I mean, it's life in the wilderness to a large degree. But the promised land is out there. And that's the whole point. Like, ultimately, it's about getting to the promised land. And so I think vacations are sort of like a mini little picture of that.
I love that you said that, this attitude of hope, and sometimes in the midst of despair, and that vacation points us toward that hope. Because I think sometimes when we look at travel, I think there's something transcendent about it, in the sense that we are seen in, we're in a place outside, we're reconnected with our bodies. We're reconnected in time and space where we're at, especially taking pilgrimages.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's why I'm excited to go specifically to Rome, taking that pilgrimage to be with our Lord in this place. It reminds us that we're on our way, on the path of a journey, and we're called to enter in and direct our time toward Him. And even these moments of just plain rest in Hawaii, right? Or taking a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, Rome, wherever it might be, World Youth Day. You're actually recognizing there's something special about the human person, about me and where I'm going and where I go along the way.
Yeah, I think the transcendent notion, I think that's a great word for it, especially with pilgrimages. I think any vacation, but especially with pilgrimages, what you get is a little slice of eternity brought down to earth, right? Like those holy
yes.
places, the reason you go to that holy place is because it's holy. And what that means is it is God's place, right? Like God's presence is there in a way that He's not in just regular day-to-day life. That's why you take the pilgrimage. And so, yeah, you get a little taste of the promised land right there.
I love that.
And that's exactly why we go on pilgrimages. So that's an excellent point.
And you get to experience the different faith of different cultures all over the world. And for me, that's why I loved going to Assisi, because you saw the difference in the way they interact, both on a social level of this attitude, especially in Europe. They were a little more connected and less on their phones when I had gone. And it was actually so offensive to them when we Americans, when I was in Rome about 5 years ago, we would be on our cell phones at the restaurants. Now, normally I'm not, but since we were together all day long
yeah.
and we only had Wi-Fi in the restaurant, sometimes that was our silent time to just kind of decompress from visiting with
sure.
everyone else.
Yep.
But the waiters and waitresses would actually be offended that we weren't visiting. They'd be, talk, visit sometimes. It would be so fascinating to see that they do have that connectedness a little bit more
right.
in those areas.
It'll be interesting to see if that has changed at all when you go back now.
I am curious to see that as
yeah.
well.
So that's the first point. Anticipate your vacation if you want more joy out of it. The second is avoid a couple of big errors, one of which is planning a vacation without enough thought to your personality. So basically he's saying match up your vacation with who you are as a person rather than, well, everybody likes this vacation. That doesn't mean you'll like it. I think this is a pretty decent point.
I do. I definitely think that, because part of this enters into social media in comparison. If you think about it, well, so-and-so went to Cabo and they had a really nice time and they had so much fun doing X, Y, and Z. Well, I want to have that fun. I want to do that rather than recognizing, well, actually, maybe I don't like shopping in Cabo or
right.
just sitting here at this particular place. Maybe I like to hike more. And that's something for me in planning the Rome trip. They threw an itinerary out at me and I said, oh, no, no, no. I like to do a little bit of hiking. I want to make sure there's free time where we're not the whole time just jumping from one
yeah.
place to the next, to the next. Or maybe you like enjoying food more. And so it's important you go somewhere that doesn't have odd cuisine that you're not going
that's
to like.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I took my friend with me to India one time.
Oh.
And I love India. I love the food. The bumpy roads are a bit much and the drive, but you know, it's third world. You get whatever. And he just hated it. He's never going back. Oh, yeah. It was the worst. But our personalities just didn't match up.
Okay.
And so along with going to a place that matches your personality, I would just add on there, check with the personalities of those other people. Like some people,
yes.
you know, they can sit on that beach for 20 hours
oh,
in a row
dear.
And you're just not moving and they're just happy as a clam. Whereas other people, like, I need to get into a store or I'm going to die right now. And for me, like, I don't want to do either of those things.
Right.
I don't, store is going to kill me, but also
me
20 hours is too much on the beach. All right. Like, I can do one, but I need, let's be doing
right.
something in between, right? The hike sounds fantastic
oh,
to me. Let's
that.
Do that. So we could probably vacation all right together
because
my
go.
Wife and I, we're all about the hikes, but we have vacation with people who are more about, listen,
oh,
I need to get into the store. And we're like, no, I can get into a store anywhere.
right.
So anyway, just, yeah, it's good. I mean,
yeah.
match your personality.
And I think that that's really important because I personally don't think I'm the easiest person to live with. I know that. And I'm not the easiest person probably to travel with, but I actually think That's because most people aren't easy to travel with. And, you know, this is something...
No, that's right. I mean, yeah. Traveling sort of, you get all of your personality traits magnified, and your expectations are such, like, listen, I'm spending all this money and taking time off from my work, and
yes.
I want a particular experience. So right. You're right.
Well, and you know what's interesting is when I went to Europe, I went to Ireland, France, and Rome. And when I was there, we started with 10 days of like a detox in a small town in Rome. Well, I hadn't quite finished all my finals and my papers yet, so I got stuck for 5 days in Ireland working on my schoolwork. Well, this is what was shocking to me. There were others on our trip who didn't have to turn anything in yet still, and they would just stay at the hotel and do nothing for 5 and 6 days. So I only ended up having a couple of days, barely, of no homework time, and I injured my foot. Long story. But what happened was, they just wanted to stick around and do nothing. And I'm like, I'm taking...
I can tell by the disgust in your voice. I'm with you. I'm like, no, come on. We can. If I want a nice hotel, I can go down the street and stay in a nice hotel.
Right.
We got something else to go see.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
I did the Ring of Kerry tour. I drove all over Ireland in this little paddy wagon, which, by the way, the engine kept shutting off as we were driving. And it was a 15-hour tour.
Oh, no.
I didn't know if we were going to get back home. It was... But those are good memories. And if people can't be flexible in the midst of them, then you kind of have a problem.
Well, and that's another thing. How flexible are you? Like, do you want the very, set out 5-star hotel tour where you're just on the bus and hotel, that kind of thing?
Right.
Or are you okay heading off on a horseback somewhere? Do, you know, like, this is all very important things to think about when you're going on a vacation, especially if you're going with other people. I've seen lifelong friendships actually ruined over vacations.
I have too.
Yeah, so be careful with that. We'll have a little bit more, a few more tips for having a wonderful vacation when we come back.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So one of the struggles that people often have when looking at vacations is they're just focused on the value of the trip. And maybe that might be, you know, how much they spend or how much they don't spend, where they're going. And what can happen is you lose part of the focus of traveling, and that is the connectedness that you have with other people. And I think that what they end up showing in some of the studies about traveling and enjoying it the most is that you need to kind of pull back and enjoy the people more so than the price point. Maybe you stay more local, right? And you have these particular people with you. And I think that that's really important because it puts it in perspective.
Yeah, I have changed my philosophy of vacationing and traveling in general, actually, whether it's for business or whatever, over the years, thanks to my wife, for one thing, and a few good friends of mine that I've happened to travel with, just like we'd go together, like filming a movie or whatever. And they travel differently than I used to. And I'm like, boy, you really have this down. Like, you are much better at this than I ever was. My wife has really helped me, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, plan ahead and really investigate where you're going. She's great at this. I had a more pragmatic, like, all right, we're going to go and, you know, we'll get into an affordable place and spend some time, and then we'll move on to the next. And I just, you know, didn't think about it that much.
Plan.
Yeah. So we planned, but here's what we also plan. And this I owe more to a buddy of mine. Go find where the locals go, what they like, what they do. What's this place known for? What do the people there, what are they known for? And really get into experience that.
One of the things I like when I travel is I actually use, even if it's local, because I go up and down the state all the time, all over, but particularly California, there's so many incredible hiking trails.
Yeah.
And so there's this app called All Trails.
Nice.
And so I'll just find, okay, what are the closest trails that I can just hop on? And what's nice is that that's actually something you can do that usually doesn't cost anything. And you have great memories, incredible scenery. You can pack, you know, your snacks or whatever it might be. And at least I personally could hike all day and be totally content.
Right. The going with the cheap thing and how not to be too obsessed over the money. One of the other things I have learned is that it's okay to spend a dollar or two more for a really good meal that the locals really like than one that's like, you know, McDonald's. I understand, you know, you're traveling with a big family, got to eat cheap. But if possible, eat the good local cuisine, even if it's a buck or two more. Mm-hmm. Don't get too focused on the pragmatic stuff. I think that's what he's getting at. Relationships, don't be too focused on money. Two big arrows to avoid.
You know, I'm going to throw this in on the money one, and this is partially from struggling with autoimmune disease and not being able to eat a lot. When I've traveled, I've tried to make sure I have the accoutrements that I need in order to do some basic cooking or meal prep, even if it's just chopping. And you know what I've learned is, you know, if you can stay, sometimes it's less expensive to rent a place rather than stay at a hotel, especially when you're traveling outside of the U.S. But go and buy the local foods.
Yeah.
Go to the local grocery store, see what other people are buying. I've tried incredible cheeses and meats and things like that. And I spent a lot less money, but I experienced the culture more. And for me, oh my gosh, local dairy farms, the cheeses, the jams, you name it. Teas for me. I love just drinking tea. You don't have to go to a shop and buy tea at a coffee shop. Instead, go and buy a local tea and go home and make it and sit and enjoy it.
You know, this speaks to, I think, a little bit about the whole science of vacations in general. People are after a particular experience. And one of the things this author, and we're talking about a story that's found at theweek.com. One of the things this author points out is that people tend to look back on their lives and value the money they put into experiences more than stuff. So you might have the nice car and you might enjoy it, but what do you really look back on and really love about your life? Those experiences, and that's what the vacations is all about. And so going and experiencing that amazing food or going to a CC or what, like those type of things are what we're after here, that sort of transcendent sort of thing, like getting into some other culture and experiencing that. That's okay to maybe spend a dollar or two more for that, I think, is what we're
absolutely.
What
we're not saying to spend more, but just being okay. And I think that has to do with planning again.
Yeah,
it comes
right
back to planning in a sense. And so that's where I think coming up on his next tip is he says, schedule your time. Essentially, don't leave your time free. Otherwise, you'll just waste it. Or I know a lot of people, again, they just stay at the hotel and do nothing, but plan fun things to do.
Yeah. Now, and that might be your personality. Maybe you like to hang out at the hotel, and that's okay. This, I think, speaks more to what my wife has taught me over the years, that doing a little research into your place and planning to hit some of those things while you're there really can do a lot to add to your experience. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you are someone who does, listen, I don't want to get up at 8 in the morning and be going until 10. I want to, all right, you can still chill, but fine. There's something cool about that place. There's something that's unique to that area. Doing that little bit of research and planning ahead of time really will help to add. And so, I mean, my wife has been unbelievably good at this over the years as we've traveled. And, you know, we travel pretty cheaply, but just finding, oh, did you know that this place has the best croissant in all of, you know, like all of the whatever, right? And this sort of thing. So, yeah, a little bit of research, a little bit of planning goes a long way.
And I think that research, at least for me, I love food. I love food. And planning where the local good food is really cool. Or things, you know, this is kind of funny, but it's a little bit off, but experiencing the local culture, as you said, actually opens you up to experiencing the people of that culture. So, for example, we took a bus ride and we traveled probably about 4 or 5 hours on a bus. And so different locals were jumping on and off as we had a further destination to go. And I ended up just sitting in an open seat, kind of like spaced out a little bit from the group because I needed some quiet from them. And this older gentleman sits down on the bus, and we're in an English speaking area, so it was great. And I just asked him, tell me about the indigenous plants here. Like, what are the different trees? And all my friends made fun of me listening in for like an hour on my conversation about indigenous plants. But it started by going, hey, we have something in common. This culture here I'm experiencing for the first time. You can share it with me. And what happened is he ends up sharing about, well, that's the hospital that my wife gave birth at, and told me about his wife and the life and the struggles during different periods of time in Ireland. And it opened the time up. And it was partially by scheduling, hey, we're going to take this bus ride through the cities, through the small towns to get to our destination, and open yourself up to experiencing that.
Yeah, this is, you know, I talked about my buddy. He's actually the director of photography on most of my works. And he'll go to a place, and this guy can talk to anybody. But it's similar, and I'm much more shy, you know, I'm much more reserved. But, you know, I'll look at our itinerary, and I'll say, all right, well, here's the shortest way from here to here. He's like, no, we'll take this route through this little town, and we'll stop at this lake because it's supposed to be fantastic. And so we'll do that, and at the lake will be some sort of fisherman. And he'll start talking to this fisherman. And I remember this older guy just fishing, telling us all about his stories. I think the guy worked for NASA or something. He had all these amazing stories, just like you were saying, and all of this local culture. And yeah, you're right, just open yourself up to what might be available to you makes those trips a lot more amazing.
And it teaches us something about our day-to-day life when we're home as well. We're at the grocery store. You have share something in common here. Have a conversation with the person who's cutting your meat or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a great point. Everybody's got a great story, right? There's a lot of great stories out there that we don't. That's a good point.
Yep. I think another one of the neat elements that he brings up, and this one I think people really struggle with, is savor the trip and how to savor it. So before we even go any further, I think the bottom line is the thing that gets in the way the most is our media jumping on, or should I say our devices, learning to pull back and step away from them.
Yeah, that's obviously a good one. This one I'm a little bit of two minds about. Sometimes people are so focused on thinking about whether or not I'm having a good time now. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to be happy. Like, you know, it's like my kid on a roller coaster or something thinking, oh, this is so fun. This is so fun. You're actually sort of ruining the thing when you're thinking about whether or not it's fun. You just have to actually enjoy it. As soon as you start thinking about, am I having a good time right now?
It becomes boring.
You
sometimes
actually take yourself out of the situation and reduce your ability to enjoy it. You actually have to lose yourself in the experience. And then you think back later, was that a good thing? So I just want to throw that out there before we talk about, well, what does it mean to savor? We're not talking about you asking yourself 20 times a day, am I having a good time? Like, isn't this wonderful? Am I really focused on how wonderful it is? No, I think it's more like what you said, Timmarie. Lose yourself from some of that other day-to-day stuff and get into the experience itself of that vacation. So enjoy, you know, Half Dome in Yosemite or whatever. Don't worry about whether or not I can get a great Instagram pic of it and all that. You know, like that sort
of
thing.
It's like being present and not obsessing about how to do that, I think, is really important, as you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
And we struggle in general right now with being present. So it's a lesson we can learn about. We enjoy just the simplicity of, wow, I'm here. And he says in here, one of the good things is to look at the person next to you at the right moment and say, isn't this fantastic? Things like that. Now, I think this could be taken a little odd, like, oh, this is great. And having to say that, like you're saying, could be problematic. But if you're up on a mountaintop looking down on this beautiful scene, whatever it is, yes, you can say, wow, this is amazing.
Well, yeah, that's right. But it's more focused, again, isn't this fantastic? Like focused on that awe-inspiring vista that you're in front of, focused on that, as opposed to, and this is all I'm saying, as opposed to, am I enjoying this?
I think that's
right?
A great
perspective. There's a difference there. One, you're focused on, what are my feelings right now? That's self-focused, and that's not going to make you happy. Whether or not you're enjoying it, or that's not going to do it. But being inspired and focusing on the whatever, the ocean, the mountains, the roller coaster, whatever it is, focused on that and saying, that is amazing, that's a difference. And that's a very good distinction, I think, to one is going to actually make you happy. You can never actually be happy by trying to find happiness.
Right.
It's always going to be something else that's going to make you happy. So focus on that other thing. And ultimately, that is going to point you towards God. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what vacations ultimately are all about.
Timmarie and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmarie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmarie on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmarie Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmarie.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
You may have asked yourself, how do societies change? Like, how do moral revolutions take place? It wasn't that long ago that things like same-sex marriage would have been unthinkable. I mean, really not that long ago. Like, President Obama administration came out against it as he was running. So that's a very short time for a huge societal revolution to take place. Well, one of the ways I would suggest it happens is through propaganda, that stories are placed out there that are at the very least half-truths and oftentimes just flat-out lies. And they are couched in real-life supposed stories, right? And so if you want something to take place, a very effective way to have that take place is to put stories out in the culture that show the benefits of this change. And so, for example, when the sexual revolution was taking off in the late 1960s, we had all of these stories in places like Cosmopolitan magazine about the joys of young women going out and being sexually experimental, and the joys of people cheating on their husbands, and what a great thing this was. And now, they're all lies. None of that stuff was actually happening. It was actually causing a lot of heartache and pain,
right.
But the lies were there. And so that's how that societal revolution took place, largely through this propaganda. We see propaganda in the same-sex attraction area in shows like Will and Grace and Modern Family, where, oh, these people with same-sex attraction are shown just happy and go lucky and living perfectly normal lives. Again, it's fiction. It's not based on any sort of truth, but it's out there. Well, I want to bring to your attention in this segment a story that I think is, again, another piece of propaganda. It's found at Slate.com, and it's called Confessions of a Part-Time Mom. Here is the headline, Timory: Divorce and Shared Custody Suits Me, and It Suits My Kids, Too. And it's the story about this mom who got divorced and no longer sees her kids as often as she used to, of course, since they're separated, sees them on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And it starts out, hey, it was hard having the kids crying as you're tearing them away from their mother. Oh, yeah, that was painful, but now it's just bliss. It's excellent. I can do whatever I want during the week. I get to see my kids on the weekends and shower them with gifts and be the fun mom. And hey, it's awesome. Everybody loves it. And I think that is a big fat lie.
Well, and I can't believe just how the article starts talking about being a part-time mom. Who gets to be? Who as a mom gets to be a part-time mom? You're always on as a mom. You have so much to juggle and balance and care for. The fact that someone could be a mom part-time, man, like they are not experiencing, in a sense, the full extent of the responsibilities of motherhood.
Well, but she sees that as a good thing, right? This is the idea. I mean, well, you're right, of course. I just want to read you this because she starts out by playing to the stereotype of the harried mom who's miserable and can't keep up. So she says, adding to my initial anger, disappointment, and shame about the end of our relationship was a heavy layer of guilt for forcing our children to trundle back and forth between us, wishing there was a GPS tracking device for the baseball gloves, soccer cleats, library books, and lovies that always seemed to be at the wrong house. She throws that out there. That's what we do know divorce is like, kids trundling back and forth between parents. That's not the kids. You know, we have this notion that, oh, the kids are strong. Kids will get over it.
They're resilient.
Kids are resilient.
They can handle anything.
It's tough at first, but then they're okay. No, that's all. You're right. There is no such thing as the part-time
mom. It makes me so angry when people say, well, the kids are resilient. Everything's fine. And this is what stands out about this article as we go through this. She is defending and talking about how great her life is and says nothing about her kids and how they do during the whole article here at Slate. Her main, in a sense, tagline is, I am far more able to be present knowing that sooner or later I get to be absent.
Yeah, what does that mean, right? Like, that's a non sequitur to start with. Like, that's what's the point you were making, right? Like,
yes.
No, if you're absent, you're absent, and that's not good.
Well, and she talks about how, yeah, you know, people ask, don't you get lonely not having your kids around? Because essentially they do 5 days on, 5 days off. And so she said, yes, at the end, I am pretty lonely and pretty sad, but then, you know, I kind of appreciate it because then when they show up, I actually want to be with them. I'm excited. I can be on the whole time. And sure, what happens though then is that I'm actually ready for them to be gone. I'm sick of them. I want them to leave. It's relieving when my ex-husband shows up to take the kids.
And certainly that attitude will have no effect on your kids growing up.
Right.
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 Do you want your kids reading this right now or sometime in the future? Like, I just got sick of you. Like, I cannot handle another day with you. It was good for me to be away from you for 5 days because you were draining all the life out of me. And so now I can get to go back to my own apartment and do my own thing. And I don't have to have you as a drain.
Well, it's
real good.
So great because I can go out and do adult things. I can go out and drink with my girlfriends. I can go out and spend time. I don't have to worry about the kids that are saddled on my back. She honestly, I'm sorry to be so blunt, but she sounds like a very self-centered individual, especially given the fact that she does not even talk about the well-being of her children in this entire article.
Here's a part of her paragraph. Many of the things I need to feel human are child unfriendly. These include having time to write, work, go running, have long, lazy conversations with friends over drinks and dinner. Many of the things that make me feel subhuman involve the endlessly repeating, mind-eating vocabulary impoverishing rituals, the butt wiping, teeth brushing, and hand washing of wriggling resistant bodies, the no, no, no that constitutes much of child rearing. Anything? Yeah, I'm sorry, you're right. If there was ever a selfish paragraph, that's it. Like, you're so self-focused, you don't realize that you could actually find your true humanity in loving someone else. In, yes, doing the butt wiping and the teeth brushing and the dealing with their no, no, no. That, in fact, is what makes you human, because to be human is to love. You, unfortunately, my friend, are becoming less human as you focus more on whether or not I had my glass of wine and my lazy conversation. I mean, it's the opposite. It's so distorted. That's what, frankly, that's what makes me hesitant to give this article too much weight. I suspect, I could be wrong, either this person is very selfish or this could be a made-up person. I'm not beyond thinking that this is a made-up story.
I
would just throw that out there. This could be one of those, like, the Cosmo things we know about in the past.
Sue Ellen Browder, for those who don't know.
Sue Ellen Browder made up stories for years for Cosmo magazine. It's how they work.
She said that was their goal, was to create this lifestyle to essentially influence the culture, to make other people desire, well, everyone else is doing this, why wouldn't I?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I have no doubt that articles that appear on Slate could be of that nature. So this could be just straight lies and propaganda. Or she's very selfish. Either one. Let's contrast that very quickly with an actual authentic story, a book that just came out by
incredible Layla Miller. It's Primal Loss, Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak. And actually, Patrick Coffin did an interview recently. Go check out the Patrick Coffin Show and her interview. It's incredible. Layla Miller, I am so thankful that she herself has reached out over and over again to now grown adults who are children of divorced parents. And here are all these adults coming out, sharing about their actual experience of what it was like to be a child both then and now as an adult, and what it's like to have their parents separated. And, you know, man, this one, it just really touched me, having very close people in my life who have to go through these same struggles. And young children are scared to talk about, well, whether or not they're unhappy because they just want their parents happy. Adult children of these divorced couples even now are scared to speak out, even though they have such strong feelings on this.
Yeah, that's something that's not, literally, not talked about by the culture or by the... Yeah. The children are expected to stay silent.
Yes.
The children are expected to be, hey, we're talking about the parents here. The parents are the ones that are the main players in this, and we can't get along, therefore we're going to separate. And we don't think... You talked about it. The article we just referenced from Slate never talked about the kids much.
Nope.
Just, oh, they'll be fine.
And that's the thing. I can't tell you how often I talk to people who say, well, kids are resilient, they'll be okay. But here's the thing. These kids are the kids that are socially ignored to the trauma they're experiencing. These are the kids who are just sent to therapy. They perform not as well in school most of the time, or sometimes end up being over perfectionists, trying so hard to please their parents to get attention. They often end up with hypertension, attention deficit disorder and are medicated then, and they're just pushed through, expected to just be resilient. Nothing's wrong. It's about our happiness. But these kids struggle so much. They can't talk about the other half of their family half the time when they're with the other half of their family. They often don't even see one of their parents.
Absolutely. Jennifer Roback Morse has an excellent article about the book, and she calls it the divorce fantasy world, where there's only two choices. Either the unhappy parents stay miserably married, or they separate and everyone's happily ever after. She says, in this divorce fantasy world, the children are all better off if the parents split. They're delighted that their parents are happy, and they have no ill feelings. It's all a lie. It's a fantasy world that simply does not exist. The right. children are hurt, and it's something we have to be more upfront about.
Right.
And we have to work harder at keeping marriages together. There aren't just two options. There aren't just you stay miserable or you split up. How about you change?
You've changed. And that's, I think, what stood out to me in a lot of this conversation is that here are adults saying, well, it's better if we don't stay in a miserable marriage or if we don't kind of have this intensity in fighting. And I finally had to look back at it and think, you know what? It's better for kids knowing that your parents are staying together because of you, and that not only are they staying together because of you, but they're working on being better people for you and for each other. And that is learning to love.
It demeans who we are as people to think that we can't become better. So I encourage you to check that out. Go to ruthinstitute.org for all sorts of wonderful stuff. And check out the book. It's called Primal Loss by Layla Miller.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to the show, and what a segment this is going to be, because the one and only Patrick Coffin just showed up at the studio, Timmery. And first we're like, I don't know, Patrick Coffin? We don't really... But he begged, and so we let him in. Patrick,
welcome. We put him on the bad mic, though.
We did give you the bad mic.
I brought my own stadium full of fans, too.
That was amazing. Can we do...
Do you do
like drum rolls and other sound effects as well?
He's taking out the phone.
Badoons.
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 So it sounds like your self-esteem's really high right now, that you can sit here multitasking, phone, walk into our studio and take over our show.
My parents complained when I was a child that I suffered from high self-esteem, so I don't know if that applies. I'm not sure.
What did you do exactly?
I was the quintessential class clown. I know that's shocking, but I think the big problem today is high self-esteem and helicopter parents, and everything is good job. You know, the kid drops the ball. Good job. You guys like the New Yorker magazine cartoons?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites is, it's a dad in his den, and his toddler son, probably 4 years old, is walking into the den. He's carrying a trophy bigger than he is. He can barely hold it. And he's saying to the dad, "We lost."
I was going to say, was he at the baseball award ceremony recently?
Yeah. Gold star for showing up.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So actually, good to be here. Thanks for letting me storm your show and bring it straight into the ground.
You are welcome.
So speaking of the New Yorker, they had another little piece about self-esteem. Maybe it went with that cartoon. I don't know. Talking about the roots of our national obsession. And you would say it's an obsession, right? I mean, the kids today, the notion that's primarily drummed into their heads is that they are special.
But don't you know I'm wonderful? I'm a millennial. I'm wonderful. I can do anything and everything.
Anything and everything, and we affirm you and give you a trophy for it.
I feel bad that we let more than a nanosecond go by without affirming what she just said. I'm so sorry.
Are you aware of the roots of the self-esteem movement? I was not. And
the roots, well, if you had to wake me up and demand that I answer as far as authors go, I would say it's Carl Rogers, Eric Fromm.
Out of here. Listen to that memory kicking in.
You know I'm reading this, Timmery. Come on. Yeah, I think it's the secularist, non-judgmental, so-called neutral psychotherapy that arose in the 60s.
Were they coming out of California?
Of course. Along with EST, right? EST. Virginia Satir, who is actually a very good, it's a long story, Satir, but she has that famous you can see this in doctor's offices. I am this, I am that, blah, 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 but I'm okay. It's the I'm okay, you're okay
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, right. I'm okay,
she's
you're
one
okay,
of, one of the
everybody's
leaders
okay.
Of that.
Well, yeah. I think you're probably correct. I'm not going to double check you on that one, Patrick.
I made up all those names, so you know, good luck with your research.
But there was a politician in California who represented the Big Sur area, speaking of ESPN.
Big surprise,
because yeah.
they're so into their spiritual wonkiness of
John,
New Age.
John Vasconcellos, who recently died, 2014. He was a California state legislator for 38 years, though. But he was the guy who pushed this. He stumbled upon some of the psychological research, some of the books you probably mm-hmm. just mentioned, mm-hmm. and said, hey, look, kids who have self-esteem tend to be more successful in life. And he started pushing that in the California legislature, and in 1986 got it passed.
But he was bringing it in task force into the educational systems with the kids going from the 80s on, focusing on affirming these children in any way possible. It turned even into the church anymore, our self-affirming retreat exercises that are done with
right.
kids.
You see this in National Catholic Reporter a lot. Come to the Jesuit place in Big Sur and minister to yourself.
Minister to yourself.
That's a tag, that's an actual tagline. Minister to yourself.
Wow.
But the biblical view, I think, of esteem is that what our Lord calls the greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, presumes what? That you naturally love yourself. You care for yourself. And, you know, husbands who care for themselves will care for their wives. So there is an already strong premise that we're meant to naturally love ourselves.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that all of the psychological research was complete bunk, right? Like the notion that if you have a healthy respect for yourself and a healthy love of yourself, that you are going to do better in certain parts of your life.
Yeah.
That's pretty legit.
100%.
The problem came when you had this as the one and only thing that we're going to focus on. And this is what they credit, the New Yorker credits this guy with, that he made that the one and only thing mm-hmm. that education focuses on, basically.
Right.
And it took off across the country as if this was the key, like this was the one thing that we needed
yeah.
for success.
So affirm Johnny, don't correct him ever.
Well, yeah. there's a difference yeah, right. between you're excellent with potential and you're excellent and you're entitled or you're able to do anything. Not everyone's able to do everything. And I think that that's the mentality that people struggle with, especially as I'm seeing, you know, my peers in their mid-20s, they're struggling to find jobs right now, but they think that they're entitled to any position without the background other than education to back up that position in the workforce.
Right. They want to work from remote. They want the perks and the bennies because they were told they're fabulous since they were, you know, in britches.
Right.
And how about lurking behind this is the failure to distinguish between shame and guilt. Shame, you know, if you're hating yourself and you do have the classic low self-esteem, we all know the mopey teenager who really, they think they're garbage wrapped in skin and it's a problem that needs healing. But guilt is different. Guilt is you have done something that is wrong and you feel bad about it. And that is good and right and fitting. So I think there's a baby bathwater here thing that's happened too.
Well, and that's the problem is so many of them think they have a low self-esteem that they're then incapable of achieving well on a test or in a certain area of academia. And so they're right. struggling in school right now, but it's justified because their self-esteem's low rather than saying, okay, you need to work harder now.
And what right. about and what about the notion that just focusing on self-esteem apart from a worldview that is accurate? So, for example, you look at the idea that, hey, Timory thinks well of herself and she's fairly successful. Therefore, thinking well of yourself must be the key. But you don't have any of the good philosophy or theology from an accurate Catholic mm-hmm. background, for example. And so you're just like, oh, well, how do we increase self-esteem in Timory, or how do we make that person feel good about themselves? Oh, we're just going to keep telling them that they're special. Mm-hmm. But you don't actually have an accurate view of what we are as humans, right?
Right.
You don't actually have the notion that we are created in the image of God. And to have proper self-esteem would be to be humble before God, actually. And so taking this one little truth apart from an accurate worldview causes mm-hmm. a lot of problems too, I would think.
One of the figures I'm reaching out to interview on my show, shameless plug, patrickcoffin.media, is Jocko Willink. He and another former SEAL commander have written a book mm-hmm. called Extreme Ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And that book is the application of SEAL team training and experience to the business world and entrepreneurial enterprises. And one of the things that he makes as a great point is there are no bad teams. There are only bad team leaders. And if you go through life being really easy on yourself and soft on everything, you're going to be soft on everybody. And so the quality is going to be down. So I like to apply things to the realm of Christian life. So when you read the saints, they are the hardest on themselves of anyone. Why? Because they're, you know, self-flagellating and they hate themselves? No, because they see the gap between where they want to go and where they are. And where they want to go is full identification with Christ, who's perfect. So they feel the sting of that gap between who they are now and who they really want to be.
Well, and I think that this is a good point that you bring up, because a lot of people struggle to identify with the saints anymore because of this self-criticism.
Oh, that's an interesting point. So the saints always kind of being severe on themselves and gentle with others completely reverses what these people, the generation's grown up with.
That sort of goes with my point, too, that they're looking at the saints apart from the saints' Catholicism, right? Like they're looking at them apart from the worldview that the saints lived in. And so it doesn't make any sense for the saints to be hard on themselves. Well, no, we wouldn't. Why would we be hard on them?
Right.
But they're not actually being hard on themselves in the proper sense.
Right. Bishop Sheen makes a wonderful point about this. He says the concert pianist wants to sound like, he wants to play like Rachmaninoff. So that's why he's obsessively trying to get better. He knows that the end point may never, ever come. So great pianists or any artist, they don't want to compare themselves with their peers. They want to compare themselves with the master, like the nth degree of that. And you're right about divorcing it from worldview. Sanctity makes no sense apart from the source from which sanctity flows.
It doesn't make any sense apart from
last
God.
Last time I checked.
It's like just punishing yourself for punishment's sake.
Well, and this is going to be the next big problem, because here's the thing. We're starting to give up on self-esteem, and the next big thing is grit. Apparently, this is how the New Yorker article ends, that we've realized, the self-esteem thing isn't really working out. We got a bunch of narcissists. So what we all have noticed, though, is that people with grit succeed in life. And so that's what we're going to start hammering into our kids, is that you need to have grit. You need to muscle through it. And I can just imagine, I mean, I'm thinking of your SEAL team folks, right? Well, the principles that you take from SEAL team are only going to work, again, within a particular context, right? If you take some of those principles outside of their context and try to isolate them, they're not going to necessarily be good.
Yeah. And what about that golden thread that runs through the Catholic faith of both and? How about healthy self-esteem and grit?
I know, right? Like, why couldn't we? Oh, no, you just have to focus on one.
Well, the world always wants to separate them, put them in separate, like, watertight silos.
Our teachers' colleges, they need one thing, Patrick. They just need one thing to focus on. We can't have grit and self-esteem.
Can't walk and chew gum.
Well, it reminds me of Joseph Pieper when he's talking about the virtue of hope. And he's talking about how it's a perfect balance from a philosophical perspective between magnanimity and humility, and how the two go hand in hand, depending in, as if everything was on you, but also hoping and believing and humbling yourself before God.
Mm-hmm. There's another both and.
There you go. All right, Patrick, hey, thanks for being here today.
No, thank you
That's
for thanking
you
me.
You get one segment.
I'm triggered by this exit. I feel totally underused.
This has been Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.